This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. And I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Jill Gentry. She is with the Food Depot here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having us.
It's great to have you now. The Food Depot is continuing its work year after year to feed people who don't have enough money to buy food here in Santa Fe and surrounding areas. What are some of the, who are these folks who are using your services? What are some of the profiles of the people who need food assistance?
Really, there's no one answer to that. A person that is experiencing a food shortage or needs emergency food assistance looks just like you and me, honestly. When you think about how tight the economy is, with relatively limited jobs and, low-paying jobs, the price of things has gone up, there's huge inflation, it's really harder and harder to make ends meet, and has been for many, many years. So you think a lot of people are really living paycheck to paycheck, and one thing can tip that balance. So
Exactly. You
lose a job, your house gets foreclosed on, you have a blowout on your tire and you have to spend $500 to replace that. And all of those things can combine basically to create a situation where someone can't make ends meet in a given month.
And so the problem, the systemic root of the problem seems to be, and it's the root of so many problems in this country, really terrible income inequality.
Definitely, hunger is an issue of poverty. There's absolutely no question. And what we see frequently is not that person that doesn't have a job habitually and really is just staying around home and collecting benefits and that type of thing. What we are really seeing in terms of emergency food assistance is the working poor. Families where at least one adult in the household has a job, that scenario represents more than 50% of the families that are served by our partner agencies. So yes, absolutely. Underemployment, being underpaid, not having consistent work or work at a high enough threshold to really lift a family out of poverty, those are all contributing factors for sure.
How do you gather the food that you distribute at the Food Depot?
There's so many different places. We have a really generous community, and food banking is a really intense machine, which is really fantastic. So to answer the question on a local level, we have over 100 local product donors. Basically every grocery store, any food service type place that you can think of outside of restaurants, they all contribute food to the Food Depot.
Restaurants not?
We don't do prepared food so much anymore, and that's for reasons of food safety. So restaurants don't overproduce
right. Like
they used to anyways. That's not cost effective for them. And typically you don't want food that's been setting out prepared in a restaurant, waiting to be picked up, to be transported, and then sit in a shelter somewhere.
Right.
So we're not really in that business anymore. But we are in the rescue of food department when it comes to food that would otherwise be thrown away, like expired packaged foods. Those are really good for a long time after the date that's marked on the packaging. So we work with our grocery store partners to set that food aside for us, and we can bring it into the food bank, which makes a huge, huge difference. We also work on the national level. We're part of Feeding America and that network of food banks. So we work with other food banks in the state of New Mexico, like Roadrunner. We all have designated service areas. Ours happens to be the 9 northernmost counties in northern New Mexico. So we serve those 9 counties. We bring food in through that network, and that supplies us. We also purchase food at wholesale prices or vastly reduced prices for buying in bulk. And we offer those foods out to our agencies as well. So there's a number of different sources where that food comes from. And it also comes from folks doing food drives.
Yeah. So a neighborhood or
absolutely
any group can organize or a company can organize a food drive.
Absolutely. And at any time of the year. We're just closing out the holiday season, and it's been amazing. And people have been so generous, both with food and financial contributions. And thank you for that. But you can definitely do a food drive year round. people are experiencing hunger in April just as much as December.
Yeah. Now, what are your criteria? Are there any kinds of food, like mega junk food or whatever, that you don't take? Or is it all considered, non-perishable food? It's food.
Food is food, to some extent. So when it comes to recruiting donations from our grocery store partners, we want to make that as easy as possible, which means reducing the amount of staff time on their side that's spent sorting through things. So we just say, if you're getting rid of it, we'll take it. And we have volunteers at our warehouse that sort through that to check the integrity of the packaging, to look at the expiration dates and see what can and can't be used. But we don't turn things away. We do place a very high value on nutritious food items. But at the same time, it's really important to preserve choice. And that means our agencies choosing what they want to serve to their clients, and the clients of our agencies being able to self-select from a variety of foods and choose for themselves. We don't necessarily take the stance that we should be in a determining position of what people should eat. We want to offer choice,
and that's
really important. So when we make choices about what we purchase or what type of donations we solicit on a national level, we do want those to be high impact, high value calorically, very nutritious foods. So when we get to choose, we choose nutrition.
Right. You get food from so many sources, and just the way you're talking about it, it's a huge organizational project.
It is. It's a logistics piece, and I have to say proudly that that's something that we're really good at. Food banking is a really well-oiled machine. We're in the business of traditional food banking, so we operate basically an operation that distributes 335,000 meals every single month to a network of over 145 nonprofit agencies, and we do it with a staff of 15 people.
Amazing. Now, you've talked about how you get food, and also you collect other household items, right?
Yeah.
Like dish liquid and things like that.
We do household and personal care products. We also have a program, which we'll maybe talk about today, that's specifically geared towards diapers and infant supplies. So we're a little bit bigger than that, than just food.
Right. So diapers and infant supplies, I guess that's also a huge need. Especially, families with small children are some of the most vulnerable families in the state.
Absolutely. When you paint the picture of who is really affected, you see very often single parent homes where the mother has to work outside the home. What we like to talk about in terms of our Diaper Depot program is really a catch-22 that not a lot of people are aware of. And that is that in order to receive federal benefits, which we would refer to as welfare, you have to be in school or in the workforce, which requires the parent to be outside the home. Child has to be in daycare to make that happen. I would say that over 98% of daycares do not accept cloth diapers. So you have to Oh, it's for real. And I have a 2-year-old, so I did a lot of investigation into this when I was getting ready to have her. And that was absolutely what I found to be true as well. So both from my reading and from my experience, I can say that's true. So sending a child to daycare, when you have a really, really tight family budget, disposable diapers are an added cost. And you can't use WIC funds to pay for diapers. You can't use food stamp dollars to pay for diapers. So that comes straight out of a cash budget. And what we found was that a lot of families were having to make a difficult choice of, I'm going to have to not send my kid to daycare because I can't afford the diapers they need to have.
Oh, my goodness.
So then you drop out of the workforce, you lose that income, you lose federal benefits because you're not participating in the workforce, and it's just a compounded problem. So we started the Diaper Depot program several years ago, and we're distributing over 100,000 diapers.
We've talked about how you gather all this food. How do you distribute it, both here in Santa Fe, in the city, the county, and then in more rural areas?
So thanks for asking that, because it's actually really a misnomer that we do direct service, per se. So as a food bank, our primary responsibility is to acquire as much food as possible, warehouse and inventory that food, and then offer that food to our network of partner nonprofit programs. So you're looking, we have over 145 of those, and you're looking at examples such as locally, Bienvenidos, Bag in Hand, Feeding Santa Fe, Kitchen Angels. So a program, the Adelante program. So a lot of the different nonprofits that have a feeding component to what they do come to us to get the food that they need for that component. So think about shelters for battered families and the homeless, after school programs for kids, senior centers. different youth programs. All of those are different agencies that otherwise would have to be hunting around, talking to grocery stores, seeing if they could get donations. And this is just a more streamlined approach.
So you're like a wholesaler.
Kind of, yeah. So basically all the grocery stores and other local product owners deal with us directly. They give us the donations, and then we distribute them to the other nonprofits. And at a really high-level way, basically we create an inventory every single week of what we have in stock. We offer that via email to all of our agencies simultaneously, and they place an order with us for that food. And they have many different types that they can choose from. Donated foods, they can choose to participate in our wholesale purchase program that I mentioned earlier. They can also choose to enroll in our commodities program, which is one that we administer for the state. So they have a lot of different options about what level they want to get involved on, what types of foods they want to receive. And then we offer them the opportunity to come pick that up in person at our warehouse. They set an appointment, or we offer a delivery free of charge.
Now, don't you also have a kind of mobile service that goes around to rural areas?
We do. That's our mobile food pantry program. And that turned out to be really, really important for reaching some of the most in need people in our service area. Because you get a tiny town like Vallecitos, and they have no infrastructure. There's no existing food pantry. There's maybe not even a church where they could have a food pantry. And when we were really investigating how to get food into those communities, what we found was there were people who were able and willing to help get the word out, even unpack trucks or pack boxes, but there was no physical space in which to do it. So we are now serving 22 different sites in 15 different communities that way. We're serving over 7,000 people with that program, and basically we take the truck out. A group of local community grassroots volunteers meets the truck, they unload it, and they've already gotten the word out to say, hey, on the third Thursday of the month at 10, we're going to distribute some food. Anybody who needs help, come meet us. And folks will show up, they get a bag of food, and they go home.
Now, we're talking to Jill Gentry from the Food Depot here in Santa Fe, and there are lots of other agencies in northern New Mexico who do similar kind of work. How do you partner with all of these other food agencies?
So basically, we provide support is one way to think of it. So if a food pantry is dealing directly with a client in need, someone who needs emergency food assistance, we are sort of behind the scenes providing the food that they need in order to do that. But one of the amazing, amazing projects that we've had the good fortune to be spearheading in the last couple of years is the Agency Relations Councils, or the ARC project. And this is really where we're working on some systemic approaches to hunger. We started up in San Miguel County, and the idea was really to use a collective impact approach to bring all the key stakeholders within a community together to solve hunger. So that was school officials, government officials, people from the medical field, getting everyone to the table to say, what are the issues? What resources do we have? How can we work together to really get on the same page and solve this? And we engaged our local partner agencies as well in that process. And amazing things started to happen. So up in San Miguel County, we had 7 or 8 different agencies up there at the time. Half of them had never spoken to each other before.
My goodness.
And so it was really incredible that they started to coordinate, well, why do you deliver on this day? And we should distribute on that day. And, well, we could add a second distribution maybe to fill in that blank. And really, once they got going, it was incredible. So in the course of the first year that we worked on facilitating these team building, you know, strategic planning sessions up there as part of the ARC, we saw food distribution in San Miguel County skyrocket. Tremendous numbers of people who'd never been reached were being served. They started a school-based food pantry for West Las Vegas City Schools. It was just really incredible. So we've expanded that up into Colfax County now. We're working in Clayton and Raton with 2 independent groups working on similar goals. And we have plans to expand out into Rio Arriba and Taos in the next year.
Now, we are just about out of time, but there's an event coming up which is always very important to talk about, which is called the Super Bowl.
The Super Bowl. Not the one with the football, but the one with the spoons.
Are they on close to the same
day? They're close. We're not on the same day anymore, but we're on Saturday, January 30th at the Santa Fe Convention Center, Community Convention Center, from noon to 2:30. Tickets are on sale now at thefooddepot.org. And this year you're going to get to taste soups from 30 local restaurants, a total of potentially 60 ounces of soup if you really go for the gusto. But basically, you get to cast your vote for who's the best in each of four categories, and then for the best overall soup in Santa Fe.
And Jumbo used to win year after year year. And they have, I think, very graciously sort of bowed out and let other people.
There are a lot of incredible chefs in Santa Fe and a lot of people doing really, really unique things and great making great food. So it's been really exciting to see who's come to the table. We had Andrew Cooper from Terra won a couple of years ago.
He's awesome.
Andy Barnes from Dinner for Two won last year after years of participating. It was awesome victory. His soup was amazing. Both of them will be returning this year. They're going head-to-head, actually, in their cream category this year. So it's going to be really, really exciting. We're super interested to see what shakes out. And, you know, every dollar of that $30 ticket provides four meals to a New Mexican in need, and that's what matters.
The Food Depot is on the web at thefooddepot.org. Jill Gentry, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.